I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, bringing you something pretty dramatically different, I believe, as the resident lone libertarian here and really in central Mississippi. I come at the news from a different point of view. To some people, that's valuable. To others, not so much. But anyway, one of the things I don't do a whole lot on, and it's really because everybody else does it. I do stuff that I think is not covered as much on. It's almost like a litmus test when I look at stories. I try to find the ones that are not being covered. So there's a good amount of variety here on the station, a variety of things that people can listen to. I don't do a ton of stuff on the culture war. And there's a kind of a main reason for that is, probably the main reason is that it's done so many other places. Not that it's not important. Other people do it here on the station and across conservative talk radio. It's an important issue. But I'm also wary of drawing too much attention to it because I really wonder. The media has a way of taking very small slivers of society and making us believe it's the norm. And so they drag us into these narratives. Now, when it comes to woke culture coming for the schools, we certainly are seeing it out of our corporations. That's a financial issue more than it is a moral issue from them. These corporations are doing this for their own self-serving interests. But it is important stuff, and I've got some clips I want to play next hour because there's a level of insanity to it. And just when I ran across this little batch of clips of TikTok teachers, I just wanted to kind of, examine exactly what's going on with those. So we'll get to those next hour. As I say, the woke culture is, in my opinion, a purposely created situation to divide people. And we've seen that people can be brought to levels of insanity that we probably didn't think were possible just 5 or 10 years ago. Certainly 10 to 20 years ago, many of the things we see right now, not just in culture war, but when it comes to taking an experimental shot that's no safety testing and people actually tattooing pharmaceutical companies' names on the shoulders there's just so much that's really bizarre. The world has changed a great deal mentally in the last 5 to 10 years, and I believe that this is purposeful. But I do want to look at it today because some of these clips that I found I'll play next hour are just, they're beyond bizarre. As I've said, one of the toughest things I think about this radio show, and probably for other guys as well, is and gals, I don't want to be sexist, is trying to constantly report on a world that has just gone insane. This is why I finish every week with This Week on the Crazy Train. But anyway, we'll get to that next hour. Some economic stuff to start us off today. Quotes of the day today. Bill Murray, the great comedian. One of the great crimes against our youth. I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. A great piece out from the Brownstone Institute about what we've done to our children. But I think one of the biggest crimes that I've seen against our children, at least my kids' generation, the kids that they hung out with, none of them have seen Caddyshack. I don't know you can have a healthy society if most of our kids have not even seen Caddyshack. But anyway, Bill Murray said, so if we lie to the government, it's a felony, but if they lie to us, it's politics. Steve Bannon's learning that. He's played both sides of that now, hadn't he? Mark Pazio says, order followers are the equivalent of modern-day house slaves. who would rather enslave their brothers and sisters than grow up, develop real courage, and think for themselves. A lot of house slaves out there. I can't decide if this one story I ran across on Reason magazine, I can't decide if this is good news or bad news. It was clickbait for me because the headline tease that was on the Drudge Report said, "Most Americans think government corrupt." Well, this is something I'm going to click on because it's about time. This is essentially the kernel of this whole show, 5 days a week for 2 hours a day. For 12 months a year is the corruption of our government and our political class. And so, of course, I'm going to click on this. The headline on this Reason magazine is, "Most Americans think government is corrupt. A third say armed revolution, quote, may be necessary, unquote, soon." So I'm going to read a little bit about this poll. And as I say, I can't really decide if this is encouraging or discouraging. A new poll from University of Chicago's Institute of Politics finds a majority of Americans think the government is corrupt and stacked against them. To probably no one's surprise, 73% of poll respondents who identify as strong Republican respondents agreed with the statement that the government is corrupt and rigged against everyday people like me. So there you are, Republicans. See, a feather in your cap. You do understand exactly how bad things are. What I'd love to have seen is this poll conducted during the Trump administration. I suspect, well, I don't know. Trump was calling out government corruption even as he was heading up and growing, funding and growing that corrupt government, but he was pointing it out. So maybe Republicans are pretty much on board, regardless of who's in office, that the government is corrupt. But certainly in light of January 6th, political theater trial that's going on right now, I would imagine Republicans are ripe to say that the government is corrupt. But this poll goes on to say Republicans are far from alone in this sentiment. 51% of very liberal voters agreed with the same statement. Overall, 56% of survey respondents said the government is corrupt. This included 66% of all Republican respondents, 63% of independents, and 46% of Democrats. A majority of Democrats think this government is just there to love on them. A survey of 1,000 registered voters found that a significant number of people expect that extreme measures may be necessary to protect against government overreach. 28% of respondents agreed with the statement that, quote, it may be necessary at some point soon for citizens to take up arms against the government. 36% of Republicans, 35% of independents, and 20% of Democrats agreed. And so this is just, it's interesting to see this, but I tell you what, if 46% of Democrats think the government is corrupt, these are the people I can talk to. At least we have the same starting point. How in the world is it possible that 54% of Democrats right now can be so ignorant as to what is causing their problems, to think that this government is above board? I don't believe we've ever lived in a time in the United States with greater corruption. I'm historically ignorant in certain areas. We've had ebbs and flows. We certainly have had massive corruption stuff. When I look across the board, it doesn't matter if it's the warfare state, the welfare state, the medical establishment, the media, its ties to our government. I don't know we've ever seen corruption to this level. We got Nancy Pelosi right now, as we speak, knocking the cover off the ball, investing in chip stocks as she supports a bill giving $52 billion to chip makers. It's right out in front of our face. I don't know if you saw that press conference with Nancy Pelosi where she's asked about this, and she basically just gave a, oh, that's ridiculous. And then she can't even just walk away. She has to push the microphone down and walk away. Queen Nancy dare not be questioned. But anyway, for anyone out there, if we've got 73%, I guess it was 56% of people think the government is corrupt. For the other 44% of you, do a little bit of research. You don't have to scratch very deep in this one to understand you are living under one of the most corrupt regimes that mankind has ever known. When I come back, we're going to get into a little bit of this economic news. Someone sent out a great recap of what the airlines have been up to over the past few years. I mean, holy cow, the hits just keep on coming. I'll be right back. Radio is tweeting at the nation. They say you better listen to the voice of reason. While we're on the topic of massively corrupt government that the Americans are starting to catch on to at this point, I will be updating you on Joe Biden's health. I know this is something that everybody is concerned about as we wait. I was trying to find a news report I heard when Biden was first diagnosed with COVID. And the news report said something along the lines, I wish I could remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of people around the world are in a state of uncertainty. They're all concerned about Joe Biden's health. Something like that. I was just thinking, are people people around the world are really worried that Joe Biden's steady hand may be taken off the yoke for a moment? The guy's a walking corpse anyway. It's a weekend at Biden's as it stands right now. I'd imagine there's a lot of people that probably already thought he was dead. But we will update it because there was a very interesting press conference about Joe Biden's health. And, I know we're all concerned for the commander-in-chief. Are there still people out there, as I report this poll on the vast majority, particularly of Republicans, know that our government is hopelessly corrupt? Are there still people out there who say, well, you can criticize Biden, but you've got to respect the office? Are you still out there? It's got to be the boomers, right? No offense, or maybe offense. I don't know what the people is. But we do need to respect. I heard this during the Obama years from Republicans who I might disagree with Barack Obama, and I guess these were Mitt Romney fans who were really disappointed Mitt Romney didn't win in 2012. It's, I'm not a fan of Obama, but I do respect the office of the presidency. So basically, what it is you've got Republicans who say, "Oh yeah, the entire organization is corrupt." But you got to respect the office of the leader of that corrupt organization. I'm well on record here saying I've got no respect for the office of the presidency or the office of any of these people. It's become an absurdity to think that we should respect an office that is corrupt and bosses us around all the time. This will be probably, I don't know if we're still living in reality, this may be recession week. Now, the Biden regime is busy right now rolling out op-eds and blogging on the White House site to try to change the definition of a recession. We covered that yesterday, but the number is expected this week along with another Fed rate hike. I've got a little stack of headlines now to show you how things are going in what they tell us is a booming economy. This is overheating. That's what this inflation's about. It's overheating. There's so much prosperity. Everybody's so rich. Of course, prices are going up. Here's a stack of headlines. Difficulty paying bills tops pandemic high. Rubini. I think it's Nouriel Roubini. Severe financial crisis looms. Why has he got to be so negative? Can't he just stroke our hair and tell us that this is just a blip in the screen and that America will always, always persevere? I'm sorry, that's a poke at my own, the charges against me of being too negative. Fed set for another big rate hike with the economy on knife's edge. Generation in first bear market. Yellen downplays, this is our Treasury Secretary, Yellen downplays recession risk. I did a whole show yesterday talking about the speck, that little tiny group of people in Washington, D.C., against the other 330 million of us, that is not only massively corrupt, but consistently wrong. Either lying or wrong, usually a little bit of both. So your Treasury Secretary says, there's no risk of recession. We are literally, possibly hours away from them announcing that by the technical definition of a recession, we've been in one since the beginning of this year. And you've got your own Treasury Secretary telling you, we don't see it. We can't see that coming. Housing market chills, another headline. Upper middle class squeezed. That's like a headline out of a Mike Madison show a few months ago. As I said, that inflation has been stewing the American people every year for decades now, particularly from the 1970s. That's why they had to change the way they calculated it. Because if the headline number had reflected real inflation, people would have been ticked off, back in the 90s about inflation. So they just changed the way they calculated it, and everybody went right back to sleep. I mean, I want to stress this point one more time. You just take a look at what's happened since the 1970s. This is the first real time in my adult life were really talking about inflation. Oh, occasionally something would pop up and prices would be a little overheated. I think, you know, a couple of years where they reported maybe 2.9%, and it became a tiny topic. But this is the first time people have been really upset about inflation. But if there hasn't really been inflation until now, can you explain to me how we went from households living good, solid, upper middle class lives with just one parent working, no credit card debt, no massive student loans? I mean, this is just a couple of generations ago. We had one worker in the family, typically the father. The mom stayed home, took care of the house, took care of the kids. The dad went to work. They had vacations. They had a modest mortgage. Had a car payment maybe for a year or two, not this 84-month thing we've got going on now. If there's been no inflation, if this is really the first time we need to really be talking about inflation because we're outraged about it, do you not understand the stealth inflation that they hid by changing the calculation over the past 50 years? That's why it now takes two workers in a family to support a family, and has for now 50 years. You had to double the workforce in your own family just to maintain. This was not to get ahead. This was not to squirrel away more money. No, this was to keep your head above water. We took women, typically. I know, that's sexist. We liberated a Mike. Yeah, I know an awful lot of women that are working, not because they want to, but because they need to. I know a lot of women, and I'm all for, there's some great women business people out there, great managers, great women entrepreneurs that love what they do. But I know a whole lot of women that got liberated into a job through this 50 years of inflation that they didn't ever report on. We never paid attention to it because they bogused up that number. These women would much rather be home, maybe pursuing something that they enjoy, maybe spending more time with their kids. It's 50 years of inflation. I know it's bad now, but this has been going on for a while. But I've been talking about the fact that the water level is rising on who this economic situation is coming from. And we've got people out in the streets. I don't care if it's Black Lives Matter or inner cities or whatever it is. Lower classes have been stewing in this inflation and just really struggling to make ends meet, regardless of the number of sustenance checks that they get from what they believe is a loving government. But the dissatisfaction, poor education, everything else, they've been stewing it. This water is rising, and it's up and above the middle class now, and it's coming for the upper middle class. And this is the time. This is going to happen. There's going to be a lot of upper middle class people that have really thought that just going out and voting for Michael Guest in the primary took them an hour to get to the polls. They push the button. They go home. They wait for the general election. They get off the couch. They go to the polls. They vote for Michael Guest or Roger Wicker or Cindy Hyde-Smith again. It takes them another hour, 2 hours a year. They feel like they've done their civic duty and protected their country. There's going to be a time very soon, I would imagine, that these people realize that just going and pulling the lever for that Republican and thinking that you've done your duty to secure your nation, those days are going to be gone. You're going to realize, oh, my God, I really got to I got to take some action here. This is not working. A lot of people have known that, but the upper middle class, those people who have been comfortable, I don't really blame them. Really, if things are going well, why be bothered with a bunch of negativity? But when it comes for you, and it's coming for you, I bet you're going to get a lot more engaged. And last headline here in the stack of headlines, half of older Americans can't afford essentials. And I don't want to play something on that in just a second here, because I think it's interesting. This is not just an American phenomenon, and this is why I rail against this idea of Bidenflation, because I'm going to play you a clip from Australia, and maybe you can call in and explain to me how Joe Biden caused inflation in Australia. It makes no logical sense whatsoever, yet I'll hear it all day long. Here was a guy who tweeted this out to recap where the airlines are. Just listen to this. This is, and again, I come to you as a Delta Airlines brat. I traveled the world on Delta Airlines. My father did his entire career after the Navy with Delta Airlines. They treated us great. He had a pension plan. We flew free, mostly first class. Not a bigger fan of Delta Airlines growing up than me. My dad would come home on a Thursday sometimes early from work. And we said, what are you doing home in the middle of the day? He said, pack up. We're going to Hawaii. And we would pack our bags, and that evening we would be on a flight to be in Hawaii for the weekend. I'm a big fan of of what I got from Delta Airlines. But the airlines now that they've become basically welfare children of the state, this Dan Price had tweeted out this little recap of what the airlines have done. Airlines spent 96% of free cash, that's free cash flow, on stock buybacks for a decade. I talked about this a lot right before they were bailed out around COVID. And if you don't understand what that means, they spent 96% of their free cash flow to buy back their stocks, so that would juice the stock price so the executives would make record bonuses. That's what they were doing. Then, when COVID hit and they allowed the government to shut them down or shut down our economy or force masking, and this is where I say it sure would be great to live in a courageous nation where CEOs of companies just look at the government and go, no, we're not doing that. You play your little games, whatever you want to, in a federal building, but we're a private airline. We'll tell people they can fly with or without a mask. We'll take them wherever they want to go, and we'll have whatever occupancy on our planes we want to. We're a private business. The problem is the airlines take so much damn money from the government, they can't resist. This is what, you know, fascism looks like. But the airlines spent all this money to buy back their stock to juice their stock options, and then they had no cash to weather a storm when COVID came. So airlines spent 96% of free cash on stock buybacks for a decade. Number two, they got a $50 billion bailout and cut 90,000 jobs anyway. They returned to billions in profits, paid back zero to taxpayers, and raised ticket prices 16%. And most recently, they canceled the second most flights ever this year. I don't know why I'm laughing. It's just, you know, it's just insult to injury here. They were given $50 billion. That's a lot of money still. I know we throw these dollar figures around. $50 billion to a bunch of private companies. And the reason we even had to give it to them was because for a decade previous, they've been using all their cash to juice their stock options, to try to keep their stock high by buying their own shares, to financially manipulate the price of their stock. So they just took all that money for their own selfish interest. Then they need $50 billion in taxpayer cash. They still fire 90,000 people, and then they jack up prices by 16% and cancel a bunch of flights. Well, what else do you do but laugh? You know, I have not had to fly. You know, I was disinvited from my little brother's wedding because of my pure blood status. But I got to tell you, the market is ripe for an outlaw airline that just tells the government to go take a flying leap anytime there's any restrictions or demands for masks or anything like that. No, we hire people. We don't demand that they get the shot. We are a private business. Boy, I tell you what, there is so much room for free market capitalism in air travel right now. I can't imagine how successful someone could be. Southwest tried it and succeeded, and now they've gotten so big they're beholden to the government as well. Anyway, I wanted to get to one other thing economic. I guess I'm going to take a break. That's another what I believe is a tiny bit of a teachable moment. Some people won't like it, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I hope that some of this stuff that I cover economically is, number one, interesting to people, but number two, explains some things to people. I don't know if I'm really good at it or not. I'm just really kind of a common sense guy. I'm an economics nerd. I'm constantly asking anybody in business what's going on with their business. You know, I was talking to a guy at Nissan the other day. They've extended two of their shifts from 8 hours to 10 hours. So now they've got two 10-hour shifts instead of two 8-hour shifts. They're capable of running 24 hours a day. But right now they're running two 10-hour shifts is what he explained to me. So they just can't make cars fast enough. I don't understand it. I really don't. So there's a lot of things I don't understand. But I do understand, you know, what inflation is. And I really want people to understand it because we don't want to make these mistakes again. People will make decisions on who they vote for, the questions or the demands they make on politicians. You could make the right demands and make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen consistently into our children's future. That would be super duper. I almost don't care about us anymore. We've already made our bed. It's time for us to lie in it. but we have a responsibility to our children to not leave them with this mess. So hopefully some of this economic stuff makes some sense to people and people start to understand a little bit about it. I mean, I can do shows on the bond market if you want me to. I mean, I understand that's not compelling radio for a lot of people, but it's so important. You know, the bond market dwarfs the stock market in size. No one really talks about it. Very few people understand it, but it's very important. Credit markets, particularly in a world that's this awash in debt, the credit markets are more important than the equity markets. You know what maybe the biggest market in the world is that's having just a huge problem right now? The Chinese real estate market. I don't know if anybody's paying attention to this. This is one of those stories I don't think I've really covered. I covered just a little bit of it, but the Chinese real estate market, I believe Chinese, the average Chinese person's wealth, they have got a middle class over there now. And the average Chinese wealth, I believe, is 75% is in real estate. And what's happened is Chinese orchestrated, just like here in the United States, everywhere that's got central banks, they've got the PBOC, the People's Bank of China. Now, these central banks print up a bunch of money, suppress interest rates, create this real estate boom, and they did the exact same thing in China. So in China, apparently, the Chinese citizens were paying basically, I believe at some points, full purchase price to developers to build apartments. And the Chinese, I believe, had gotten to a point where they were owning multiple properties. I mean, they've been duped into the same crap here that we have here. Some of these developers, because of rising costs, they can't complete these projects. Just they're still holding these people, these Chinese people's money. And so the Chinese people, in a huge movement over there, are just not paying the mortgages on these properties that they don't inhabit. They're basically investments. They gave the money. They went out. They borrowed money. They gave all the money to these developers. The developers took the full cash value, I think in a lot of cases, up front, and now they can't complete the projects. And the Chinese are going, well, I'm not paying my note on that then. And this has gone kind of viral in China. Now the developers are not paying their lenders. Even though they got all this cash up front and they're not actually doing the work, so this could be crippling to the Chinese real estate market. And my understanding might be it is the largest asset class in the world. I keep telling people, I know you want to see American warships exercising American leadership and going up and down the Strait of Taiwan. I got to tell you, if you just sit down and shut up for a few minutes, the Chinese are going to implode. Communism doesn't work. It does not work. And what they have done with printing money over there is just the same thing we've done here. But if this real estate thing catches fire in China, they are going to have huge problems and potentially a currency crisis as well. We should really just let the Chinese implode as they're going to. But anyway, here, hopefully some of the stuff I cover here is somewhat informative and certainly a tad bit interesting to some people. And there was a piece written in Bloomberg by Garfield Reynolds. He said this, and this is what I believe is a teachable moment that many people will not want to learn the lesson of. Risk assets are hoping July will be the last jumbo Fed hike. Don't go to sleep. Just bear with me a second. I'm going to make you mad in a minute. The way yields and equities are dropping underscores the message from investors to the Fed. Quote, "You better slow down!" Exclamation point. The recession drumbeats grew louder after last week's slump in U.S. activity gauges, and with rates, traders pricing for the Fed rate to peak sometime between November and February at about 3.3%. That's going to make it very hard for the central bank to do anything but ease back unless it wants to create real panic across the markets. Okay, so what they're basically saying, this is what Bloomberg is saying, is that investors are telling the Fed, hey, easy on those rate hikes. You're going to mess everything up. Well, you might let you get up to around 3%, but then you got to start coming back down again. Now, everybody knows, particularly on the right, the people that I speak to on a daily basis, you understand how weak our economy is right now. We feel it. I mean, we know, right? Regardless of what the Biden regime tries to tell us, we know our economy is in trouble. We are probably in a recession right now and have been for the past 6 months. And we are going to finally acknowledge it, notwithstanding their attempts to redefine the term. But investors know this as well. And so they're telling the Fed, don't you dare keep hiking rates You're going to make markets panic. Now, of course, we need to. In order to combat inflation, they need to raise rates, and they need to raise them significantly. Rates should be not 3%. They should be 10%. They've got to be over the rate of inflation to make inflation actually come down. Now, they think that a recession is going to start bringing inflation down, and it could have some moderating effect. But I explained to you probably several times, but I think even yesterday, you know what happens when we go into a recession? What does the government do? If the Fed turns around and starts easing, meaning printing more money again, then it's going to exacerbate the inflation. So we may see a dip in inflation, but the response to that by the Federal Reserve by cutting rates will create more inflation. This is the trap we're in right now. People see this as doom and gloom. It's just the reality of the situation. So the reason I say this is a bit of a teachable moment is because apparently our economy right now is so weak that you've got Bloomberg and investors and the bond market saying, hey, you better slow down. Don't be raising rates like this. And so a lot of people on the right, conservatives, will go, look at that. See, we get Biden in office. Look how bad this economy is. It's Biden inflation. It's all this other stuff. I've got to remind you of something. Back in 2018, we faced a similar issue. The Federal Reserve started to raise rates. And we were told at the time we had the greatest economy in the history of the world by Donald Trump. Now, this is what Donald Trump said when he was asked what the Federal Reserve should do. They were starting to raise rates, and they got them up to around 2.5%. 2.5%. That's not much, is it? You know this, don't you? Anybody who's over the age of 40 probably remembers that you used to pay mortgages of 7, 8%. I remember being extremely happy when I got a 5% mortgage back in 2009. I couldn't believe my luck. Little did I know, people would be getting them for 2.5% 10 years later. But when the Federal Reserve raised rates to 2.5%, this is what Donald Trump said.
What should the Fed do with interest rates?
Well, I personally think the Fed should drop rates. I think they really slowed us down. There's no inflation. I would say in terms of quantitative tightening, it should actually now be quantitative easing.
Printing.
Very little, if any, inflation. And I think they should drop rates and they should get rid of quantitative tightening. You would see a rocket ship. Despite that, we're doing very well.
And so what Donald Trump is saying, let me translate that to you. I know a lot of people don't do the Fed speak stuff. Quantitative tightening means they're going to start reducing debt. Instead, Donald Trump said, no, they need more debt. Instead of stopping the money printing and raising rates and drawing back a little bit, because the economy supposedly in 2018 was so strong. It was the greatest economy in the history of the world, repeated often and up to and including, I believe, yesterday from Donald Trump. If the economy was the strongest it had ever been in the history of the world, why couldn't it withstand 2.5% interest rates? Why was Donald Trump calling for the Federal Reserve to start printing money again if the economy was so great? It was because it was a fake economy. I know. I'm telling you. I know people don't want to hear this message. This is not popular. It's radio suicide. I'm on a kamikaze mission here to try to get to let people to understand these things. If the economy had been strong in 2018, Donald Trump would not have been demanding that the Federal Reserve go back to money printing. That's exactly what he demanded. It's exactly what they did. And now we're living through the consequence of exactly that. I'll be right back. All right, we're back. I was just on the phone with somebody. I'm going to keep him on the air, but I wanted to cover a couple things real quick. I'm not an investment advisor. I was a financial advisor, and I was terrible at it because I was very nervous about losing people's money. And so I was a financial advisor in 2003, 2004, and I felt like I saw the handwriting on the wall. And I could not in good conscience get people's life savings and dump them into equity funds because I looked around and I went, oh, this is crazy what's going on right now. This feels to me like a bubble. Now, I was early, but it turns out we ended up in the great, in the great recession there. I just didn't have the stomach for losing people's money. It is a tough time to find what you should be in right now. And I may do some research in there, but I don't even want to be seen. There are things you can do with your money, you know, to protect against these things. The idea in our system right now is you just keep putting money into the stock market, it always goes up. You know, that's just not true historically. It has been true for the United States. I'll say that. I mean, if you'd listened to me for the last 6 or 7 years, you would have not lost a lot of money, but you would have left a lot of gains on the table. I'm not the guy to listen to on that stuff, but you do need to be doing some ideas on how to protect your assets. And look and see what performed well in the 1970s or during the Great Depression. All right, let me get more positive here. No, you know, it's a tough time. It is a very tough time to figure out. And if you are nearing retirement, oof, that's tough. I think that this is going to catch a lot of people off guard, particularly older people who are at the cusp of retirement. They're going to see their investment returns going down, their nest egg shrinking, at the same time costs are exploding. That's a recipe for disaster. There's going to be some sad stories over this stuff. And this is why you can call me a doom and gloomer. You can say, well, you're so negative. I'm just trying to tell you what I see coming. And I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I got to tell you, there's a lot of great minds out there seeing this. Yeah, I mean, not even seeing the same things as me. I mean, I'm learning from them. Somebody called me on Saturday. What are you doing? I was watching some one-hour presentation on inflation and the risk of deflation. You know, this is my Saturday afternoon. I'm a nerd. Most people are just not ready for what's coming. And it's not just here. I wanted to play this because I want to put a stake in people's belief that you're going to vote yourself out of inflation. Or that this wouldn't have come if it hadn't been for Joe Biden. Somehow this brain-addled idiot crushed everything all by himself. This is Australia. Really sad to see what's happened to our Australian brothers and sisters. These tough people of the outback. We saw what they put up with. And they kind of embraced it. It wasn't even like they were put upon and they were struggling for their rights, but the government was too powerful. No, they just sat back and accepted it. It's weird. I've talked to people with relatives in Australia. They go, I don't know what's going on. They don't seem to care. Well, they destroyed their economy. But what's the similarity between Australia and the United States? Do we have the same president, Joe Biden? No. We both have central banks. And we both have central banks who have been printing money, driving interest rates down to zero, encouraging a bunch of debt, and it's created this.
4 kilometres today just to put food on the table. Food Bank has been inundated at pop-up drive-thrus, handing out free food to thousands of families battling the soaring cost of living. Adam Hegarty reports.
Thousands in a very long, different Sunday queue. Not for the footy or a show, but for a food handout. The sign of the times is purple. Food Bank.
Bills are rising, everything's rising, petrol, everything's rising.
A little bit of help for, especially during school holidays.
In our cost of living hell, the charity is a godsend. Those at the front getting there 3 hours before gates opened, many lining new territory.
Has your family ever sought charity like this before?
No, things are getting hard, you know.
2 drive-thrus, 2 boxes per car with fresh food and pantry essentials.
We've got a few boxes for you. Do you want them in the boot or the back seat?
At Epping's Melbourne Market and Chobani Warehouse in Dandenong South, enough Food Bank supplies for 2,000 families. It wasn't enough. And yes, many here do work for a living. It's why it's happening on a weekend.
But it's not people on the street anymore. It's people in your street. A lot of the people have never been to charity before and don't know where to go to look for help.
This is the extent of the turnout. This was the first line that formed earlier today, but those at the end were told to redirect and get to the back of this second line. It stretches several blocks.
She was literally crying as she approached the line, and I said to her, are you okay? She said, I've never asked for help before.
The cost of living hitting harder and wider.
Hopefully these guys can help out a bit, make it a bit easier on the pocket.
Adam Hegarty, Nine News.
Yeah. They don't have the same president we do. They got the same central banking system. They've got the same debt-based economy. It's really amazing. I'm telling you. It's not just 330 million Americans need to understand inflation. It's the entire Western world with these central banks and what they have done to the economy to prop up the donor class. The elites in every one of these countries have been killing it for decades now. And now, as you heard there, like I've been telling you, this level, this inflation, this financial distress, it's like a water level. It's going up, up, up. You heard them say, most of these people have never gotten, they're working. They've never asked for charity before. And now they find themselves in miles-long lines of cars. I'm telling you, people, it is time you understand this. Quit playing politics with what the definition of inflation. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. News break just then said Mike Pence and Trump are back in D.C. Mike Pence and his robotic way of speaking to the people. I mean, I cannot believe that works on anybody. I don't think I've ever met an enthusiastic Pence person. This guy thinks he's going to run for president. It's just weird to me. His speaking style, I've explained to you, I believe he is our first cyborg in office. This will be revealed. We may not be around. We still don't know what happened to John Kennedy. Those documents were reclassified by Donald Trump in 2017 for some strange reason, national security. But it may be 50 or 60 years before they admit to us that we did have our first robotic politician. I believe it's Mike Pence. His speaking style drives me insane. They can't even get a clip of him where he doesn't do the same cadence. And then people applaud. That must be NLP. Neuro-linguistic programming? I might need to learn that. Probably be very effective for this show. Anyway, Mike Pence. And again, I'm just going to say it. I told you Pence was a stooge from the day I came on air. I never understood the pick, was never enthusiastic, called him a creepy robot for 4 years. Everybody disagreed with me. What do you think about him now? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, anyway, the current occupant, or possibly is it former occupant of the White House? We don't really know. As I said, they're talking about, I just ran across this. Let me just stop talking and play this. There was a creepy, just a weird press conference about Biden's health the other day, and this is how they approached it. I don't know. I found this odd.
President Biden completed his first full day of Paxlovid last night.
I don't know if any of these people actually took this experimental shot. They could be that stupid. They may be trying to kill Biden anyway. So they realized a good slow kill weapon would be perfect for getting him out at just the right time where they could blame him for everything. I told you, he's going to be the blame sponge. He was the perfect stooge. He's completely out of his mind. He doesn't realize what's happening to him. They're going to blame him for everything, Republicans and Democrats. They're going to pretend like all of them never wanted all this stuff, but Joe Biden was just such a bad president. They're going to use him as a blame sponge. He deserves everything he gets. Don't get me wrong. He's a criminal, a blood-soaked monster and an idiot to boot, but they're going to use him as a blame sponge. But this is interesting to me. Did he actually get the shots? Do these people really take the shots? And now is he really taking Paxlovid? Because we're going to find out, because Paxlovid known. Fauci went through this. Maybe Fauci really takes these shots. Maybe he really takes these pills, because Paxlovid is known for this huge rebound of severe symptoms. It clears you of COVID for like 3 days, and then wham, it brings it back worse than ever. This may be how they're planning on taking him out.
Symptoms have improved. He did mount a temperature yesterday evening to 99.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow, that's 20 points higher than his IQ.
Which responded favorably to Tylenol. His temperature has remained normal since then. His symptoms remain characterized as runny nose and fatigue, with an occasional non-productive, now loose cough. His voice is deeper this morning. His pulse, blood pressure, respiratory rate, and oxygen saturation remain entirely normal on room air. The president is tolerating treatment well. We will continue Paxlovid as planned.
I don't know. Do people really care? I mean, do we need to know this? Just point by point? It must just be the media that cares about this stuff. Is there a class of people in this country that's like, what's his temperature? How high did it get? Did it get over 100? No, just 99.6? Okay. Whew. Who gives a crap? The guy's got COVID. Tell us if he's alive or dead. But the creepy thing about this to me was apparently that press conference was, that was what they said about Joe Biden. What did the White House doctor have to say about it?
The question is, when will Dr. O'Connor come out? Because to just put out a statement and shield him from questions would be the least transparency of any White House in 50 years on a presidential illness.
Wow, I wholeheartedly disagree on your last statement. So we are doing this very differently, that I would argue, than the last administration. And I'm happy to have that conversation with you. We did not see the president because we are following CDC guidance.
His doctor doesn't get to see him either? This is strange. Is the guy dead? Is there a doctor that went in there and said, I can't go out and tell the American people he's doing well? You go out there and read this little laundry list of stuff that you want to. You know what I mean? It's just odd. I mean, the White House doctor, you would think he would be the guy. I've got my problems with Donald Trump, but doctors came out and they gave the what. I think they were when he went to Walter Reed, there were doctors about every 6 hours that came out on the steps and they said exactly what was going on. Apparently with this White House, they're hiding the doctor.
And the CDC guidance is to make sure that we have minimal contact with the president and allow him to isolate.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's just weird. Some people have suspected maybe he's dead. Have we had proof of life? And maybe the clip's a couple of days old. Maybe the doctor's come out and said something now. But it's odd that the White House doctor is not the guy to tell people exactly what's going on with the president at this time. Our new COVID czar, what is this guy? This hack, Dr. Zha. He was an NBC commentator all through COVID, was just abysmal. This is one of those doctors that if in 2019 you'd gone up to him and said, hey, doc, bad flu season this year, should I wear a mask? He would have gone, no. A surgical mask, a neck gaiter, a cotton mask? These things are not designed for viral transmission. They're just for surgery so we don't drool into a patient or have blood spurt into our mouth. They're not for viral transmission, but for the last 2 years, he's told you on NBC Today Show every day, you got to mask up. I believe it was NBC. They all blur together in their horribleness. But now he is one of the big muckety-mucks at the White House when it comes to COVID stuff. And just listen to him. But he's not prepared for this stuff. He is not well prepared for any hard questions. I thought this was kind of funny. You know, this is we know what the ruling class does. They tell you what to do, and they ignore all of these things themselves.
The other question I have for you, Dr. Zha, Vice President Harris is a close contact of the president's, and the CDC guidance says that if you're a close contact, you want to wear a well-fitting mask when you're around other people. She just spoke at a conference in D.C., and she hugged someone without a mask on. She was also maskless for most of that conversation. Would you have recommended that she keep her mask on, given that that is the CDC guidance?
You know, I have not been tracking the vice president's activities, so I don't have anything specific to say about what she did. My understanding is that the vice president is following CDC guidelines on close contact. She's also recently been infected, so within the 90 days of a previous infection. But I don't know if you have anything else to offer on the vice president.
I guess she isn't following the CDC guidance, though, right? If she is hugging someone without a mask on. Just wanted your clarification on that.
Yeah, I think the CDC guidance is clear, but the problem is me commenting on what the vice president did when I wasn't actually, haven't seen it, or I don't actually know what happened is very, very difficult. So I'm going
to
pass.
She took off the mask and she embraced someone. You don't have to see it. I mean, that's what happened.
Yeah, so usually when we think about people having contact, it's for an extended period of time. I don't know. Again, I didn't see the hug. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not a relationship expert. I can't comment on a hug. Isn't this like I'm not a doctor? I don't know what a woman is. I didn't see the hug. You know, answer the question. You people have been bossing us around for so long, telling us everything we're doing is wrong, to run from other people. You got the vice president out there, no mask on. She's hugging somebody. It's not a hard visualization. Now, I want you to listen to what he says, though, just a little bit here. He talks about extended contact. This is, seems like the first time we've heard this. We've been told to wear a mask and go down the grocery store aisles in single file lines, all in the same direction, so we don't encounter face-to-face another human being for a split second as we pass them in an aisle. But he's saying, oh, no, it's about extended contact now.
You don't have to see it. I mean, that's what happened.
Yeah, so usually when we think about people having contact, it's for an extended period of time. I don't know. Again, I didn't see the hug. I don't know how long the hug lasted.
You got people screaming at each other in a park, outdoors. Two people walking their dog. One of these mask freaks, these hypochondriacs, walk past another person with a dog. The other person doesn't have a mask on. They freak out and try to call the cops. Oh, it was extended contact, so you would have had to stop and talk and French kiss this person for 15 minutes before they were a danger, but they convinced everybody that everybody who came in contact with, if they were in your line of sight, they were an existential threat to Nana.
But it's very hard for me to comment on something I really didn't see.
Yeah. Dr. Cha. This is especially gross. Listen to what the BBC did. The BBC is one of the worst. I mean, you know, we've got our problems here with our mainstream media, no doubt. The BBC is not any shrinking violet when it comes to absolute, abject, horrific propaganda over in Great Britain. Listen to the little reality show they put on for the British people.
The BBC has been hitting the headlines for all the wrong reasons in recent weeks, but it's under fresh fire today after the broadcast of its new documentary on Brits who have chosen not to have the COVID jab. Unvaccinated saw seven folk put in a house for 5 days, while a flurry of so-called experts tried to diffuse their concerns about taking the injection. Presented by Professor Hannah Fry, a data-crunching mathematician who takes credit for bringing us out of the first lockdown in 2020.
See, you know, it just hit me as I was listening to it this time for about the fourth or fifth time. I was just stunned by the fact that they rolled out this reality show. So they put seven people who didn't want the shot into a house for a week, and they sent a flurry of experts in there to try to change their minds. I guess this is... See, in Great Britain, Pfizer can't advertise on television. I guarantee you there is some Pfizer money involved in putting on this little production, but they can't advertise it. They can't market their products on television. It's only us in New Zealand that allows that. So the BBC took, I would imagine, Pfizer money to do this reality show and put it on television like it's a show.
The show ultimately tried to get the group to change their minds and get vaccinated. But participants of the program, which aired on BBC Two last night, have now hit out at the, quote, bias beep for crafty editing and cutting key scenes from their contributions.
No. No, I don't believe that for a second.
Here's a clip of tonight's guests, Nazarin, Veronica, and Vicky Borman, in action on the show.
Friend Katrina, she is 28 years old. She was perfectly healthy before. She only had one dose of the Pfizer vaccine. 5 days later, she was beginning to experience brain fog. Now she's had a stroke. She's had three suspected heart attacks. So this is a video of her having a seizure.
Now wait till you hear what the doctor says. This is, on, I guess, on television, on a reality show in Great Britain. Listen to the doctor's response to this. I mean, you actually already know what it is, but it's still amazing to hear it out loud.
How can you be sure that that was the vaccine and not something that would have happened anyway?
Another coincidence, one of millions and millions around the world of coinkydinks, that somebody has a stroke and blood clots, a formerly healthy 28-year-old suddenly, I mean, you know, even without these shots, apparently over the last year, we were going to have just this, we were already going to have this rash of heart attacks and blood clots and brain fog of young people. I mean, it's just a coincidence that the shot happened to be coming out at the same time, right?
The viewers have since blasted the BBC for broadcasting, quote, unbalanced propaganda.
No.
And the Daily Telegraph also let rip, calling the program a painfully patronizing documentary That was akin to Big Brother sponsored by Pfizer before giving it a paltry 1 star out of 5.
Well, at least that's not working on the British citizens. Holy cow. Can you even imagine? I guarantee you that was Pfizer sponsored. They can't advertise on television, so they put together a whole reality show. One little fun poll that was done on the shots before I take a break. This came out of Steve Kirsch's stuff. He's done a couple of polls, hired independent polling companies to call around to American families and say, hey, you know, have you had anybody there die of COVID, bad COVID outcomes? Have you had anybody die after taking the shot or have complications from the shots? And they got results that were not good. And so apparently they found another polling company. Now, this is a fairly small sample, but I'll tell you, they've got another polling company that got the same results from calling 523 households. Here's the results they got. Out of 523 households, 49 had someone who died from the vaccine, but only 21 had somebody who died from COVID. 11% of the people that were polled were vaccine injured. That translates to over 20 million vaccine injured people if this was to extrapolate across the entire country and the number of people who got vaccinated. So out of 523 households surveyed, 49 people had someone who died from the vaccine, but only 21 died from COVID. 11% of the people that they polled were vaccine injured. Huh. That's only 523 households. Who knows if this was some kind of a rigged poll, but we're going to find out. Those kinds of numbers you cannot hide for forever. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
Obviously, I'm occupied from 9 to 11 o'clock on weekdays, so I never know what my competition is up to, but I just ran across this clip. I haven't even played it yet. We'll all hear it together, but if the title is what it appears to be, this is The View, who I believe I am opposing right now as we speak. Isn't it on from 10 to 11? This is what they this is what they have in mind for an improvement to our current government.
And Dr. Jill becomes a Surgeon General, his wife.
Yeah,
Joe Biden's wife, because she, you know, he would never do it, but she, yeah, she's a hell of a doctor. She's an amazing doctor.
I thought she was a doctor and
PhD.
Yeah. I
could be wrong.
I thought she was I think she's a teacher, but, you know.
Golly. Okay, if that's my copy. The sad thing is, it is my competition, and it they just crush me in any level of ratings. That's a sad state of affairs. It's kind of funny to listen to the View. They wanted to clap for that, but even the View audience was smart enough to realize Dr. Jill, that she's like a teacher. She's not a medical doctor. Of course, I would say you don't have to be a medical doctor to be the Surgeon General of the United States, considering the last two or three horrific ones we've had. There was a story I wanted to read real quick. What we've done on COVID to our kids is probably the worst part. It's sad to see what has happened to what were formerly fully functional adults that are now locked in masks and fear. But what we did to our children, what we projected upon them, I talked about it from the very beginning because it felt to me like when we started talking about how the kids were going to kill Nana, I thought that's mental abuse. I have appealed to the aliens to come down to planet Earth and take our children away from us, or at least the people who projected this fear onto our children and told little Billy he might kill Nana if he hugs her. It was just gross. To me, it's like if someone's holding a gun on you and you take your child and you hold it up at them in front of you to absorb the bullet. We got to do all these things to our kids. We got to mask our kids. We got to lock them down. We got to do all these things to our kids to protect the older people. That's completely back-asswards from the way it's supposed to be. We protect our children not only from physical harm, but also from mental harm. Kids don't need on their head that they're the reason that Nana got sick and died. Brownstone Institute always does some good work. Molly Kingsley and Liz Cole wrote this: fueled by fear, we locked our young in their rooms for days on end, padlocked their playgrounds, and stopped them from seeing their grandparents and friends. We tossed their education to one side, in the process degrading it to an extent which, without drastic remedial action, will not recover. Fueled by fear, a woman in Texas locked her own child in the boot of her car to escape his infection. A university in Manchester barricaded its students into the halls of residence, and a mayor in New York gagged the city's toddlers for months. Well, that ain't just in New York. We did it here, too. Fueled by fear, we breached our species' most basic social compact to protect our young, abandoning at so many touch points our posts as guardians, and often even pushing children into harm's way mentally and physically to save ourselves. Worst of all, drunk on our diet of fear, we taught children they were, quote, vectors, silent spreaders, reservoirs of infection, posing a danger to the adults around them. Quote, listen to this quote from a university professor in Michigan. And we're going to get more to this, some of the teaching establishment after the next break. This is what a professor in Michigan said January of this year. Quote, you people are just vectors of disease to me, and I don't want to be anywhere near you, so keep your blanking distance. What we have done to our children is just unbelievable, and it led me to also see, I'd already clipped this, and then I ran across this link. Listen to this headline. No place to hide. 52% fear they're in danger every day, even at home. Over half of Americans feel like they're in imminent danger at least once a day. A new poll of 2,000 Americans analyzed how they feel about their personal safety and found 52% feel on edge every day. Younger Americans were the most likely to feel concerned about their safety on a daily basis, with 75% of those between 25 and 34 agreeing with this statement compared to just 50% of those 45 to 54. Well, that's because when you get older, you're like, nah, if it happens, it happens. I'm to that age now. I may start taking up things like skydiving, bungee jumping, maybe base jumping. I really am excited when I see those guys do the wingsuits. Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of stuff. I've had a good life. Well, you know, if it happens, it happens at this point. This story, it's on a study finds thing. It goes into dark streets and sidewalks trigger their anxiety the most, followed by neighborhoods they aren't too familiar with. Next in line were parking garages, riding alone in a rideshare taxi. It just goes on to all of these fears. Now, I will say something about this, though, because what we're talking about originally with this COVID stuff and projecting all of these fears onto our children, fears that they're going to die, fears that they are going to inadvertently kill somebody if they don't wear a stupid, ridiculous, ineffective, pointless mask. It's harming them. So we've barraged our children with all of these ridiculous fears, projected them on them. A bunch of neurotic parents have projected these fears onto their children, which is just abuse. You know, when you go through a divorce involving the children is really very despicable. Those are scars that sometimes never heal, or take therapy or real self-introspection later on in life can destroy relationships going forward in their lives because you involved them in the nastiness, use them as a tool in a divorce. We can see how bad that is. But with this, it was almost virtue signaling. My children always wear a mask because I've explained to them that they're a danger to everybody around them. I mean, this is just really, really gross stuff. But a lot of this stuff on the safety stuff was about crime, and I've done the statistics here. I've tried to talk people down from this ledge. People say this is a negative show. I'm always trying to give you the truth, the things that should empower you. 3,100 Americans are killed by a stranger every year. 3,100. If you watch the news, if you see anything else, I've talked about the fact that the statistics of children being abducted by strangers basically has not budged in 50 years. But because we got a 24-hour news cycle, they make you think that if little Sally gets out of your sight at the Wally World, she's automatically been abducted, is in a basement somewhere getting ready for the sex trade. I mean, this is where people's minds go because the news preys on this fear to get us to fear everything. And I will say that on the right, we do this thing where we look at crime, which is out of control right now. It is bad. Particularly in neighborhoods, the property theft that really can touch just about anybody. But we get this idea that we can't even get into the city limits of Jackson without dying. Kids, don't go into Jackson. This is the same kind of projection of fear. You don't want to be in downtown Jackson at 2 a.m. at a gas station. I'll give you that. But we hype these areas like everybody's just killing everybody and you're just going to die if you do this. So don't project fear onto your children. But this is what's happened. Now we've got a majority, 75% of these young adults now live every day in fear for their lives. This is not a healthy way to go. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I do not do as much culture war stuff on this show. I know a lot of the other hosts here do it. They do it well. And I try to do some kind of different stuff, but it is real. We do have a really strange culture war going on. There's a little difference in the way that I approach it and why I really don't highlight it here. I know the culture war is designed. It's created. It was not spontaneous. This is the manipulation of the mind of some Americans to embrace really bizarre things. It's meant to divide. It's orchestrated. And I look at a lot of the people, and I'm going to play some of them today because I'm mystified by this. And I don't cover it very much. I ran across these clips. I'm going to play them. Some of these teachers out there. And this is a difficult thing to do. I struggle with it, too. These are victims. Now, I know they're abhorrent, and you need to get them away from your children. There's absolutely no doubt about it. It's just like somebody who commits a violent crime. You find out they came from a really bad household. I've got some sympathy for that. It's really sad what adults create their children to be, and then the children end up paying a price for it. I have some sympathy for that. That's a nuanced way to look at things, but it doesn't mean that the violent criminal gets to walk the streets anymore. I'm sorry. That is really a shame. What happened to you when you were growing up, but now you're a threat to other people. You need to be out of here. This is the same way with these teachers. I don't know what happened to them in their lives to embrace some of these bizarro ideologies, but they can't be teaching our children. But the thing is that I think that, to me, I see this in a lot of different cases, not just in this culture war, but we've got a nation of people who many people have been manipulated to think that, you know, Russia is a threat, Iran is a threat. All Muslims just want to jump across the subway and slit your throat. People are constantly manipulated by these people at the top to hate other groups. That's where their power comes from. They've got to divide you. Each side telling you they're on your side, opposing the other side that you now hate because they've created this hatred between you, and they derive power from that. I see that. It's just I'm an observer to this. Again, when it comes to these teachers, they need to be taken out of these classrooms. And one of the reasons I don't cover a lot of this stuff here, too, is because I don't know if we really have this problem here. I know some of the Madison moms have uncovered some stuff that is very concerning, particularly about the books in the libraries. But, you know, is that just administrators who think they're being inclusive by making sure that all ideas are, you know what I mean? Some just kind of really more lazy. Do we have these bizarro teachers in central Mississippi that are actually doing what I'm about to play to you? This is a fourth grade teacher. I'm just going to play a couple of these clips. This is a fourth grade teacher somewhere, and I ran across these. These are all TikToks. I didn't run across them in TikTok. I don't do TikTok. I'm not doing Tech Tuesday today, but my Tech Tuesday segment would be don't get on TikTok. Don't let your kids on TikTok. I know that's not easy. I know that's not easy. But you're destroying their attention span, and you're also leading them into a world that contains stuff like this.
I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I do a lot of work with social justice and equity in my classroom. We have racialized conversations all the time, and my kids have gotten very good at this type of discussion. But there's one thing that keeps coming up that I'm not quite sure how to tackle. It's the slang, with cultural appropriation of slang terms, like
this woman is actually trapped in this loop. She's trying to figure out how to be woke inside of being woke. I'm trying to teach my children to be woke, but what is unwoke? Is this slang unwoke to use the slang, or am I culturally appropriating as I try to, you know, I mean, this is abuse of this woman.
Eesh, they're doing that a lot, or like, oh, that's fire. I think this one I'm having trouble knowing how to start the conversation because I don't know what my goal is in the end. And this is where I would like a little feedback.
I believe for probably the vast majority of parents, about 98%, maybe I underestimate, maybe there's 10% of wackadoodle parents out there, but I would say for about 95, 98% of parents, the goal is to teach our kids how to read, write, and do math. That's probably your goal. This woman's goal in the classroom is to figure out how to woke up her children. This is really, it's bizarre stuff. That's not the best one. Here's another one here. I've got these in a list here. I can't remember who is who. Let's check this one out.
I've been wanting to do content around this day, which is really important to me, as this is my first year as I'm out as a non-binary teacher.
Oh, yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard to think how to talk about it and how to make it pithy and catchy. And I sent what felt like a pretty vulnerable email out to my colleagues, suggesting a whole bunch of resources for each division and offering to come into their classes. And I'm so grateful to the three allies or accomplices who invited me into their class today to read. I
got to tell you, accomplices sounds like an accurate term. So this woman, is her first year as a non-binary. She's sent out all these resources to everybody, and she's offered to go into everybody's class to, I guess, explain to all the children. Let me see if it says what grade level this woman is at. It doesn't say here. She's offered to go into the classes and explain her non-binary status to all of the kids. Again, am I wrong? 90, 95, 98, 99% of parents want you to take their children and prepare them for adult life so that they can read, write, get a productive job, do some level of math, maybe understand some science in case it sparks something in a child as an interest for a career and actually contribute to society. Aren't these the things that we're kind of looking for teachers to do? This woman is spending her time emailing all her colleagues because she's so proud of her first year as a non-binary.
Read they, she, he, me, free to be, to a grade one class and...
Grade one. For those of us normies, that's first grade. What are you at first grade? 7 years old? 7 years old. Now, I'm telling you, as I play these clips, I almost want to stop because I don't want to add to this. This may not be happening here. This may be such a small sliver of the teachers out there. I don't know. I know the Madison moms have, like I said, I know these people. They've uncovered some stuff that is concerning. And they are busy actually getting off their butts and actually rooting it out of the libraries. I don't know if I've found out that they've really found some of these teachers. This feels like a blue state problem, like a big city problem. And so I don't want to be that guy who lasers in on the conservative side of things, lasers in on, you know, 2% of the entire teaching population and just says, oh, my God, we need to, you know, the whole thing is gone. It's the culture war. You got to take up arms. I mean, I feel like we highlight such a small sliver, but maybe this is bigger than I know. I really don't know. I've got no context for it. I sent my kids to 12 years of public school. I attended 10 years of public school. I never ran across this stuff. Of course, back when I was there, they weren't doing the woke curriculum. They were just failing to teach a lot. they weren't proactively propagandizing to the children. Back in my day, they were just, you know, the typical failing to teach a lot of the kids how to read, write, and do math, how to speak, how to communicate. It was just kind of your typical public school failure back in my day. It wasn't any of this woke stuff. So I don't know. I listen to these things. This is mental illness. This is mental illness. And I don't mean that, just like I talk about a criminal, I don't mean it's to be excused. It's to be routed out of the schools and dealt with at some level. You know, these people need to be taken away. Children should not be in their charge. But it's unbelievable that this is a thing. I'm abandoning that clip because I'm going to get into... I've got one to finish up with. I don't know if it's a teacher or not, but it's a weird one. Here's one more. And so it's the sexuality stuff in the schools. And I'm not breaking any new ground here. Everybody talks about this stuff. I told you, I'm not late to the culture war. I'm paying attention to it. It's just I understand the division of it. I've got other stuff to cover here. I want to make sure that people understand. We're all getting screwed by the same people. Even these woke teachers. They're paying the higher prices. Their standard of living is going to be destroyed because they are busy focusing on what they've been conditioned and manipulated into believing. There are people, you know, we want to look at every one of these people and say, they're all evil. Well, some evil might have gotten into them. I'll give you that. But it is the manipulation at the top of these organizations that's so gross.
You know, this trans stuff, this non-binary, this pronoun stuff. This is a top-down thing created, and there's just some people that are weak. Maybe they're marginalized. They're fragile. They want to feel like a part of something. They've been isolated from. They're not charismatic people. I don't know what it is. There's just people who it's like any other cult. The cults prey on these disaffected people, and they find them. When there's cult members, we want to get them out of the cult and deprogram them, right? And that's what I think should be done in a lot of these cases. They need to be taken away from the children first and then deprogrammed. Here's one other one that I think was funny.
Buckle in, I'm going to get brutally honest. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Who created these monsters? We did. We birthed them. We nursed them. We read their little nursery rhymes and sang the little songs. We taught them in their preschools and their kindergartens and their first and third grades. White women craft their own gilded cage. And we do it by raising little misogynistic, patriarchal tyrants. We raise the little boys who grow up to be the Donald Trumps, the Mitch McConnells, the Greg Locks of this world. White women raised them.
Oh my gosh. I can't remember what grade level that teacher is. That's a teacher. That's a mental illness. And, you know, I said evil has gotten into some of them. That's one of the worst I've heard right there. I'll do one that's a little bit more lighthearted, yet equally, if not more so, insane. And the lesson of this, I'm telling you, I think ultimately what I'll get to in this is get your kids off TikTok. The things that are going on TikTok, your kids do not need to be a part of. I'll be right back. All right, final minutes of the show today. I knew this would probably happen. Thank you, Jennifer. Jennifer's already lighting me up with examples of ways this woke stuff is here with us in central Mississippi. I mean, I knew it was to a degree. It's very hard for me to figure out how widespread this stuff is. They take some of these so tiny little slivers of society, they blow them up into these huge things and make people pick sides on them. It's gross to me as an observer, but I'm doing some research on this. I may do it on tomorrow's show previous to my health segment, Hump Day Health, Natural Health News You Can Use every Wednesday from 10 to 11 o'clock. Because I believe, I was listening to somebody talking about they were struggling with a child that was having gender identity issues. They made kind of just an offhanded remark that their child had been previously diagnosed with ADHD. I'm telling you, I firmly believe that some of this insanity, some of this gender fluidity crap that's going on right now is related to what is going into the bodies of our young people chemically. This can be the food. There are a lot of things that we ingest and we feed to our children in these convenience foods that are full of all kinds of hormone disruptors. And I'm going to do some research. I've kind of covered this to a degree, but I'm very suspicious, too, that there may be something to this over, as I've talked about, this over-medication of our children over the last 20 years, all these ADHD, all these anti-anxiety pills, antidepressants, antipsychotics. Our kids are being chemically altered, and those chemicals affect the brain. So we've got chemicals that affect the brain, and so I don't believe it is an accident or a coincidence that after we have put them on these foods, given all our boys all this soy, this an estrogen mimicker, all of these different things that we're doing, I think we're chemically attacking our children. And a lot of these teachers that I see, they're the younger generation of children. These are the kids that were put on these drugs originally. I don't know I'll be able to prove anything, but I'll bet you I'm going to find, I already know about the food, but I'm suspicious of these medications, that they are doing things to our kids' brains that the brains aren't working right. They're more, maybe more susceptible to messages like these weird ones. Here's one more. I guess I'll close on this. Have I got time for this? I want it to be kind of funny, but it's almost sad, but it's weird. I wanted to leave on a laugh today. I don't know if this is laughable or not. I'll choose to laugh.
I'll be teaching you guys some ways that my friends and I meow to one another to communicate when words just seem a little too difficult. So here we go. Okay, so first off, we have the normal meow that we just use mostly to get each other's attention.
Meow.
Okay, then we have the dissatisfied meow. Then the angry meow, but we only use this one on rare occasions because overall we're a very happy kid and family.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we've done something to these kids. I believe we have done something to these kids. I'm going to get on the case. I'm going to try to find out everything that I can find that is because parents need to avoid giving these to these kids. I don't think it's a coincidence that our kids and our young adults are going off the rails right after we over-medicated them and gave them this poison in their foods. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.